Good morning. Our speaker today is Keith Wiley, Kai Shin Ko Chi. And what does that mean?
Ocean, heart, mind, great understanding.
And Keith is a priest with Crystal Springs Sangha that was started by Darlene Cohen. Her picture is on the altar in the next room. She passed away almost 3 years ago.
January 12th, 2011.
And was just quite a lady. And anyway, Keith has practiced with her for over 12, 14 years now. And so, thank you for being here and joining us here. So, thanks.
This has great memories for me. I started coming here as late as 2002. And the story actually came to mind on January 18th. At about 11:40 a.m., and I was going to the San Francisco City Bookstore. I was going up that concrete ramp, and I walked in the front door, and I walked up towards the cash register, and Sagan was on my right, and I was just browsing. And I turned to my left to go through the door into that second ante room, and I turned to my right because there's some kind of Guanyin sculptures, and I looked at those sculptures, and then I turned and I looked over my head, and I was sure that I saw something moving. And I thought I saw something moving in the top shelf with this big black mass. And out of that, I could see scutes. And scutes are the scales that a snake has that go crosswise. And I know this because I just am in love with snakes. And I grew up collecting and releasing snakes and lizards and chuckawallas and all kinds. So as I turned, I saw that, and I could swear that the statue moved, but it didn't. And I pulled it down from the shelf, and I could see the name of the snake is Muchalinda, and it's the giant cobra that protects the Buddha after his enlightenment. And I just held it in my hands. And I could see the Muchalinda with the hood out, looking down, and the Buddha just, sitting there. And my mind just filled with visions. And the time went back to 500 BC, and the place went back to Gandhara, where the province, it's in northeastern India, and this is the time a week after the Buddha was enlightened, and he was just hanging around. And then I look over, and there's a small river about the size of a freeway, and there's some turbulence on the top of the river, and there's some turbulence underneath the river. Underneath the river are where the snakes live. The Nagas live underneath the river. And Muchalinda lives in a castle with his wife, and she wants him to go out to dinner. She wants him to get dinner. In December, this time of year, the temperature ranges between 50 and 70 degrees, and there's scattered showers. And there's occasionally really bad weather. So Muchalinda, King Muchalinda, the king of the area, agrees to go out and forage for dinner. And it's terrible. The wind is gusting 50. The branches are torn off the trees. It's cold. And he slithers along the riverbed and up the riverbank and up to the edge of this forest, scattered trees. And he doesn't know where to look. And it's black outside, it's dark. And he catches something that's white and blowing in the wind. And he slows down and he looks. And it's a man, and he's sitting there. And he doesn't really sink in who this person is. but he looks like he's good to bring home as a guest for dinner. So all his alarms are on, because when you are foraging for dinner, it's a life and death situation, and somebody's going to lose. And he may get dinner, but he also can be harmed or maimed, particularly because humans can fashion branches and rocks and can be formidable, and they can move quickly. So he moves cautiously up the hill towards this man who's sitting under the tree, and the snake is very wary, and the man does not budge. So the snake approaches him silently as he can, and very slowly, and then he throws three wraps of his tail around the man to immobilize him. And then he puts four more wraps. And I've read that, and so at 5 feet a wrap, that makes this guy 35 or 40 feet long. It makes this cobra a big thing. And the cobra comes up, and you can see these statues of him all over, particularly Southeast Asia, with a big cobra with its hood out. And he's getting ready and making the decision whether to suffocate the man by crushing him or envenomating him. And it's his job to know everything about his quarry. And as he's making this decision, he realizes that the man has a pulse of 55, a blood pressure of 125, 105 over 80. His respirations are 10. And this guy is completely, totally imperturbable. He's not frightened. And in that instant, the snake realizes that this is a very different person. And in that moment, he changes. And from being the snake who is attacking the man, he is the protector. And it's interesting in the statue, because if you look at it, there's really no difference in the appearance of this snake that's overhead with its fangs out, and you can't tell whether he's going to crush the man and kill him or whether he's going to protect him from the weather. And of course, we know, because we have the Buddha, that his decision was to protect the guy from the weather. So as he's sitting here around the Buddha, he remembers that a week ago, there was a man who came to this forest claiming that he was going to stay under the tree until he was enlightened. And we all remember that story of the Buddha sitting under the Bodhi tree through the three watches of the night, learning or understanding the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Way, all the teachings of the Buddha. And Muchalinda hadn't heard anything about the man afterwards. And he had decided this guy was either left and went back to the city, or the man had been eaten, because Muchalinda had eaten a couple of themselves, because meditating in the forest was common. So the Buddha is sitting, being warm, being protected by Muchalinda, and they sit there for 3 days. And on the third day, the storm clears, the clouds blow away, the sun comes up, there are rainbows in the sky, and it's wonderful. And everyone is safe, and this big snake very, very slowly disentangles him from the Buddha. And the Buddha is very stiff, and the Buddha gets up very stiff, and the Buddha bows to Muchalinda, and Muchalinda bows to the Buddha. The snake winds down the riverbank back into the river. He's got some explaining to do for his wife, because he doesn't have dinner. And the Buddha walks also down to the riverbank, and he heads north to Patna, which is the capital of the Magadha province. and he starts his 45 years of teaching. I just love this story. And part of the reason, of course, is that I love snakes. I grew up around them. I grew up in Arizona. On reflecting about this story, though, it has to be the first story of the three treasures. And the first part of the three treasures involves the Buddha. The Buddha, after his enlightenment, just sat, as we are doing today. And the Buddha had everything he needed. He understood the world. And he would have, or could have, sat there forever. In fact, there may be many Buddhas who did that, and we just don't know about them. They never did anything more. He needed something to shake him up. I really connect with the Buddha, because the Buddha had not bothered to look at the weather report. And that sounds, I can relate to that. So he's in the middle of a disaster now, because he planned poorly. And he is dying of exposure because the storm is terrible and his temperature is dropping quickly. Things can't get worse. And then he looks down at the river and there's a 40-foot snake coming out of it who is determined to eat him for dinner. So here the Buddha is truly stuck between a rock and a hard place. And in this, and in the middle of this, the Buddha sits down in the middle of the disaster, and he just sits. And the Buddha looks at the storm that is catching up with him, and the snake that is catching up with him, and he understands that there is no difference between the snake and the storm. There is no difference because both the snake and the storm are his life, and he expresses himself through the life as it comes up in the moment for him. So the Buddha just sits. The Mucha-Linda situation is different than the Buddha's. Mucha-Linda, the Naga snake, is snake nature. He's all about snake. That's all he ever can be, is snake nature, because he is a big cobra. As he slithers up the hill, his heart rate is fast. Every system is on alert. Adrenaline and steroids are flowing in his veins. He has a prey to dispatch or be killed trying. And so he is all alarm, all anxiety, all snake, and that's all he knows. He's very, very vaguely aware that if you asked him, he wouldn't say he suffers at all. He'd say, I'm a snake. And so he arrives at the Buddha, and he can monitor as a predator every aspect of his prey, and he catches the temperature and the pulse and the blood pressure. They're all normal. He's not sweating. And in this moment, Mucha-Linda knows that this man accepts him in his totality, completely accepts him. And this has never happened to the snake before. And there's this 1 second pause in one moment, and he recognizes that he has been completely accepted. And the snake's suffering is transformed in this one moment, moving to the next. This is how suffering is transformed. This is the Dharma that we're all looking for. So these two stories about Buddha and Dharma are actually kind of philosophical. I mean, there's a lot in there, maybe. But the third part is always just as hard as the seat that I'm sitting on. You can feel your butt on your seat, and that's Sangha. So the Buddha's out here in the middle of nowhere, and the snake comes up and wraps around him. And at this moment, the cobra protects the Buddha with his life. His hood is over the top, protecting from the rain. The wraps around the body are protecting him from the blowing bushes and rocks and branches. And the Buddha inside is warming the snake from the inside, and they're inseparable. So even in the first week of the Buddha's enlightenment, it's clear that the Buddha really can't do it by himself. Well, he got enlightened the week before, but he would not have survived to come down to us without the Sangha. So that's the most important of the three, is that we can find something this morning to bring us just together, just to sit together. That's what we do. At the end of my story, I wrote something called appendix, and I was uncertain whether to bring appendix in, but I want to do that. It brings me back to the San Francisco Zen Center, and it's the story of what the most important thing I learned from this. So I'm jostled from my reverie, and somebody moves by me through the doorway, and I'm holding this black statue of the snake with the Buddha underneath it, and my hands are trembling, and I put it back on the shelf, and I realize, as I said, this is what I want to talk about today. And I realized when I made that decision that some of you may like what I've said, and if you do, you'll undoubtedly edit it and say, I put a little more of that and a little less of this. And then others of you aren't even interested in snakes. But this is what interested me, and I realized that what my life is about so much is showing up at the big Zen store with a big shopping cart that barely gets through the front door. And everybody has to move aside for the shopping cart to get by with me pushing it. And I turn to the shelves and I pick up one book from every section and then one book from every author. And I pick up a magazine and a card and a t-shirt. And I check it all out and I fill my shopping bag cart up and I shove it out the door. I take this pile of books home. I take it upstairs. I pile it on my living room floor, and I say, it's too much. I'm not going to do anything with it. So this story about the snake excites me. It tells you how I see things. And in doing so, I realize that each one of you now sitting across from me are sitting with that special story that you can tell. And so all I'm hoping to do today is to encourage your practice. If I encourage your practice, and I encourage each one of your individual intimacies with the Dharma as you see it, then each one of us sit here together, intimate with the Dharma. And this is us in Sangha here at Chikochi.
I wanted to say, now that we're out of school, I would say now that we're out of school, you've grown into a fine, fine priest. That was one wonderful and reminds me of your Dharma talk there. Someone finding a difficult situation that they hadn't planned for. I wonder, because I know, like, I'm a human being, you know, and I put these black things on, you know, and it often strikes me that I'm not the person to fill these robes. But then the Sangha steps in and changes me. Have you noticed that? And can you say anything about that?
Well, in that end of story, addendum to my story, what my mode of operation is to try to figure it out and then try to figure it out for everybody else. After all, being a Buddhist is about trying to be helpful to other people. So here's another book, you know? And so what you can do is just put on your robe, say what it means, and leave it at that. And know that some people will be inspired by that. Like with Linda's story, some people will say, well, that's a good story, but I would have made it a little different. And other people would say, I don't know. But what you can do is say it. What comes to mind is this. We didn't talk a lot during Spot. At the end, we sat down and you told me the story of what it is to be on the back of a horse that's bucking. And you said, when you're there, nothing moves because you're in the center of gravity. If you're not going to get thrown, you're right in the center and everything moves around you. And the only thing that exists is the sound of the leather against it. And that's all you can do.
I didn't know this story, so this is thank you for bringing this one. So the Buddha didn't move.
The Buddha didn't move.
And the snake didn't move.
The snake didn't move.
So this embrace, it was a dual embrace.
The Buddha gave warmth to the inside of the snake, and if he hadn't done that, the snake, being cold, would have been paralyzed. They can't. When they're moving, they're okay. They're creating heat from their muscles. But when he stopped, the Buddha warmed him, and Muchalinda protected the man from hypothermia.
I guess one of the there are these other stories of a teacher loses a limb and some guy chops it off. Well, is the Buddha mind moved? Nope, not yet. And And in a way, this encapsulates it as well. And I don't understand that yet. But it's another great one to contemplate with what that means. Do you know about that?
I don't think the storm moved either.
It's a visual. I teach ceramics to children, and three ways of working with ceramics that I find is the first one is coil making.
Mm.
So that's what I was kind of visualizing. And then I really like the word embrace, because you got to have an embracer and an embracee, right? To have embrace, you can't really embrace nothing. So, just these children make—they call them snakes. I find myself correcting them. Maybe I shouldn't be doing that too much. As I'm 18 years teaching children, I find myself stopping myself from correcting. So, and it comes out of them pretty naturally to make eventually a snake. And it's usually coiled around something that isn't really talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was thinking about the snake today, if it had an umbrella. So, just sharing.
I was trying to imagine the snake coming out of the river with a hat on, and I could visualize that, but I couldn't visualize how he'd get the hat on, so I left it out.
It is quite powerful, just mentioning words. And just allowing that to, I really like what's happening in a way. I don't know if it's intention, but still mentioning the word and allowing it to kind of settle. As you said, you bring the story, and now it's my story kind of too, that you, so I'm translating or...
Yes.
I don't know if that's in a way, as I'm thinking now, it's a power of the Dharma in a way.
I sat for a year at a Zendo, and then I stopped going. And I stopped going because I was bored. And I was bored because nothing happened. I didn't talk to anybody, and nobody talked to me. And then Darlene was my first teacher, and she talked a lot. And a man named Herschel gave the first way-seeking mind talk about himself and how he'd grown up in rural America under real deprivation. And literally the light bulb went on that said, you know, not everybody is different than I am. And your story is different than mine. And the way you look at it is different. And that provides endless fascination for me. Just relating that story of the bucking bronco with Joe. Everybody's got that, and it's the same story.
Hmm. Feel like I'm in the midst of a coil. And you, this is a technical question. So what is... You said there are the scales, and then there's the other, there's going around the snake. It's another term that you used, I thought.
Well, the scales across the snake are called scutes, S-C-U-T-E.
Scutes. Across the belly.
Across the belly. And then the scales across the top are usually like plates. Sometimes they're like roofs, but they're very different. And those peculiar scales just caught my eye. And out of everything in that bookstore, that was what got me. And I just realized that there are things that get me, and I ought to pay attention to those things and trust that other people will pay attention to the other things. But I don't... They've got lots of adaptations for crawling around the world without arms or legs. You know. And that one allows them, you know, they can push. They can, with their coils, they can push along pretty quickly. But if you have them on a pretty smooth surface, they can use that as a grip, like a tractor, to move along.
So like a dozer track.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I wonder if the guy who invented that likes snakes.
Could be. When they're wrapped on your arm, you know, they can't push off, and so they catch your flesh to do that, and then they slew it down their sleeve for someplace warm.
Let's close with a closing chant.